Welcome to Fuel, a NAVC podcast for propelling your leadership journey. I'm Joe Mahalik, the Propel Leadership Development Program Manager. Propel strives to develop leaders who write, speak, and behave consistently with a heart of service. Each month, Fuel gives you up close and personal access to NAVC thought leaders who have been there, done that, and are ready to tell their stories, ready to invest in you. So whether you're interested in learning what leading's all about or you've been a leader for years, we're all on an ongoing professional journey which requires Fuel.
Hello and welcome to the Fuel Podcast. I have the pleasure of being here with Ms. Diane Koslow, the Technical Director of NSWC Corona. My name is Joe Mahalik. I am the Propel Program Manager, and not only do we do in-class leadership development, but now we've branched into this more personal and up-close discussions with leaders that should make them more accessible to you, and you can think about Ms. Koslow being Diane.
Yes.
Thanks for being here, Diane.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this.
All right. When we first talked about doing the longer version and having you sit here with me and have this conversation, I gave you a couple prompts about what some of the things we were going to talk about, so you can maybe think about it ahead of time. But as you and I have talked about, what makes you really a wonderful leader is that you have you're very accessible naturally. Like you have this way about you that you just emanate that personality. People are like, man, I feel like I could sit down and have, you know, a nice warm cup of tea or coffee with you. And so when your team said, hey, let's do this as a filmed podcast, I just said, let's jump on that. So I'm really excited about it.
Well, thanks. And that means a lot to me that I'm accessible.
Yeah.
I like to think I am. But, you know, as a leader, we never really know whether or not what we think we are portraying, if that's really being picked up by the workforce.
Mm.
But I truly feel that I at least attempt to be accessible. And as I was going up through my growth in my career, I always, you know, back in the day, back in the 1980s, and I'd look at a department head and I felt like they were untouchable. And I'm like, I would never want to be a department head because I don't want to be that way. I don't want to be the staunch person walking down the hall that everybody kind of, you know, clears, right? Right? So I'm like, so I'm just going to keep being me.
Right.
And so then as I moved up in my career, I kept saying, well, it's still working. I guess I'll just keep being me. Mm-hmm. And so to even to today, you know, I'm still me. Maybe a little bit more refined, a little bit more professional.
Got the purple suit on.
Well, got my purple suit on. But I really want my workforce and anybody, you know, whether it be professional or personal, I try to share the knowledge that I have, listen to what other folks have, and if there's something I can provide that they get something out of, then I want to do that.
What's evident to me from our conversation is that you're coming from a core set of values. And most organizations have written values that then drive their principles, and that's supposed to set the expected behavior. What are the values that, could you name those values?
Oh my gosh, yes. Trust, transparency, and teamwork, the three T's. It's something that we actually started writing down probably about 6 years ago, but honestly, when I look back, even farther back than that, and our mission of the organization and how we've developed it, that trust, transparency, and teamwork is really not only our values, but how we really expect our culture to be, how we make our decisions. It's really that foundation of everything that we do. So I'm really proud of the culture that we've set here at Corona. And it's interesting, when we've had different auditors that come in, and you know, you do the upfront brief, and I'll tell them what our values are, and that I'm really excited to hear what they have to say to make us a better organization, you know, and I'll tell them that, you know, our values are trust, transparency, and teamwork. And then in the outbrief, they come and they go, oh my gosh, you live that value system. We see that as a part of our audit. So it's interesting how it's kind of like getting a measurable result every once in a while when a sponsor or an auditor or a customer comes in and then they tell me that they see the organization that we aspire to be.
So as you talked, a couple things hit my brain about it. What fired first was at least two, maybe all three of those roll up to credibility, which is consistency of character.
Yes.
Doing what you say you will do, which ties very much into trust and all the things that we teach in our courses about how to be a good leader is all based on that. What didn't surprise me, but I was wondering about from the input of the folks that you were around, how much of it was about technical prowess? How much of it was about knowledge of the industry? And I didn't hear that.
It wasn't. Internally sound. I mean, so there was kind of an that underlying foundation of credibility in that technical area, but that was not at all, did not rise to the top. Now, if it wasn't there, or if it was detrimental, I'm thinking that's probably not a good thing, because I think you need to be technically sound, right?
Absolutely.
You don't need to be the expert, but you have to be able to understand what folks are telling you, because back to that credibility, right? They're not going to trust you if you don't have that credibility.
What would you say are some of the things that you get from being a leader, you know, that makes it more satisfying for you, similar to being a subject matter expert in a technical area?
You know, as I moved up into my career, when I got to my first high grade position, and here that was as a technical division head. And I felt different. I felt like I now am not, I own the organization. Even though I was a division head, right? And one might think that I'm just thinking now I'm engaged with my group. When I became a high grade, I felt like I am one of the leaders of the command. And so my engagement went tenfold. And so I think that was a huge part in that engagement, the command. I felt like I could influence and I can make a difference. And it was a difference in how we deliver product, a difference in how we lead our people, how we execute processes. And so leadership to me was kind of all of the above. I felt like I could make a difference. A significant increase of level of the difference that I can make with the command. And then as I moved from division head to department head, again, I'm still in the same organization, but then I almost felt like, okay, now it's not just within my command, it's within the Warfare Center family, because I was working on different initiatives across, right? And then I moved up to the deputy technical director job, and then I'm starting to really even feel broader, you know, NAVC. You know, and then you get up at the TD job with senior executive service, and I truly feel like I'm influencing across the Navy. So in my leadership journey, it's really about making things better, and my circle of influence I felt increased, and I felt the increase as I moved up in my career.
What I heard was there was a similar thing that was satisfying for you at each of those levels, but it shifted based on the role slightly.
It did, but I'll tell you the one consistent thing in that is, you know, mentoring people, talking with individuals, not only those that worked for me, but those that worked around me and on teams, I think one of the part of the original question that I kind of strayed from was, you know, about satisfaction. And I tell you, seeing somebody that I've talked with, I've mentored, I've recommended something to them, and they heed my advice and they do it, and then they come back and they say thank you because I was fearful, but you trusted that I could do it, and I did it, and now I've got my master's, or I moved from one department to another, or I participated in this initiative and I've gained so much, or I did this detail rotation, or I did this leadership program. And it just makes me feel so good, because, you know, in my career, I had people that did that for me, And I think a part of that's just, it's that giving back. It's that natural, hey, I want to help those that are coming after me, just like those that came before me helped me.
So there's so much that I'm hearing you say that is about us speaking into the lives, not just the career path, but the very lives of the people that we're leading. And that reward is that you had a positive impact on that.
Yes.
So it's so much more than, you know, you can take this technical path and you can get to this level of expertise, but who you become.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, I've had people ask me, you know, well, you know, and I'm interpreting, right? But
sure.
what boxes do I need to check to get to that next level? You know, and I try to explain to them, there is no one path, right? Because every decision we make, every choice we make, every next position we take, personal or professional, is influencing what happens. And so every journey is unique.
You mentioned something about your transition to becoming a div head that I want to go back to for a moment, because whether you intended to say it or not, you said there was a major mindset shift for you.
Mm-hmm.
And for a branch head who's considering that transition to become a div head, that what you talked about was your aperture becoming open, very widely open, and that what I took from it, and maybe you can clarify if I missed it, was that the world you were working with when you were at the branch level was important, but when you went to the div level, you said you all of a sudden had a sense of responsibility, ownership, and knowledge about stuff that was way beyond that. That's a pretty hard shift. I'm wondering, was that natural? How did that happen for you? And was it intimidating?
I don't know how it happened.
It just happened.
It just happened. And I will tell you, you know, there's different things that happen that are maybe silly moments in our life that remember. And I swear, I'm 61 now, and I've forgotten a lot. But I remember the moment that happened. Mm. And I had just, maybe it was a month into the high-grade position, being a division head. And we had a holiday party on base in the evening, right?
Okay.
And so as the night's going on, I look around and I realize I'm probably at that point, the highest ranking leader that's still remaining at this Christmas dance. I think it was a Christmas dance or some function. And it was like, I am the leader that needs to make sure that everything happens, that all of these folks get home safe, that the building shuts down, because that's my job. Mm. And I know that kind of probably sounds silly, but that was the moment I realized that, you know, as a div head, as a high grade leader, I'm responsible for a lot more than just getting the job done. I'm responsible for everything that really, a part of what happens on this base and this command, and then what this command does externally, right? So that's where it just kind of just starts growing.
When you think back to maybe before you took a leadership role, and initially when you were a new leader, what were some of the things, looking back, you wish you had in terms of development opportunities? Were there anything that wasn't there, and then you kind of had to struggle with and learn from getting the scars, rather than having an opportunity to learn from a formal classroom and then try it in a safe environment, that kind of thing? So in other words, what do you wish you had that you didn't have?
What I was given a gift at one point, and I mean, I'm a working level. It was a GS-12 at the time, right? We weren't in demo in those days. So I'm a GS-12 working level, and I'd been working in my job for about, I think I was maybe pushing 5 years, 4 years. I was getting antsy, maybe a little bit.
Can't relate.
Yeah, I know, it's hard to believe. I was ready for the next step, and I'd applied for a couple branch heads and didn't get the interview. And so my leadership, that's when Seven Habits of Highly Effective People from Stephen Covey was coming through, right? And they were looking for some internal facilitators. Mm. And so one of my leaders came up to me and they said, is that something you'd be interested in? And I jumped at it. And it changed my life. I am a believer in the seven habits. And I took the class, read the book. I struggled getting through the book. And the class I loved. But then the facilitator class was 2 weeks. And so you learned things at a much deeper level. And I've used Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, not only at work, but it's back to that whole life, right? I mean, I was using it on my kids. And, I still have my mission statement I wrote back then. I pull it out. My children have copies of my mission statement. And anyway, so that piece changed my life. So that was a tool I was given that I think has made a difference throughout my career.
If I had the chance to sit down with you in a nice, relaxed office, having a cup of chai tea, and I said, Ms. Koslow, I see all these leaders, and I see them walking down the hall, and I just get out of their way because they're big leaders, kind of like you were talking about mm-hmm. earlier. I'm intimidated by that. I don't know, would I be a good leader? I don't even know what leadership is about, but it seems like it's a natural progression and that I'm supposed to do that. Am I supposed to do that? And what should I be thinking about?
So first comment on that is, I think everybody is a leader, right? So they might be thinking about leadership positions, but the first thing I tell somebody is, hey, there's leadership in every one of our employees and in our positions, because there's a time when we need to step up and provide our inputs, technical, leadership, business, whatever it is, right? And being confident with that, to me, that's a part of leadership, being that proactive. So that's the first thing I talk about. Then I usually say, let's just talk about what makes you happy. What are the things you do at work that you get jazzed about, right? So if it's when you're working with a team and you're mentoring others, or you're coordinating schedules or doing POAMs or project management, those type of skill sets, many times, not all the time, right? But they are precursors to supervisory and leadership type jobs, right? Because in our supervisory and leadership positions, there's a piece of management too. Leadership.
It's a Venn diagram.
It's just a like Venn, right? They have to be in harmony with each other. Because at least with the Navy Working Capital Fund, right? We at all levels, we have cost schedule performance. We have customers. We get in our tasking. We negotiate that tasking. We have to deliver product, right? And deliver results. And then, but to do that, it's done by our people, mm-hmm. right? So you have that management piece, cost schedule performance, but to get that done, that's when that leadership really comes into play. So, because honestly, it's the first level folks that are doing the work. They're the real workers here. The rest of it are helping them do their job.
It's all about enabling them to do the job.
It's all about enabling, whether you're a first, second, third level supervisor, or in the business codes or whatever. It's enabling those that are actually delivering our direct labor hours. And so when I kind of interview or just listen to them and ask them, questions, what makes you happy? Then after a time of listening, then I play that back. And then as I play that back, then I will provide those correlations into leadership or not. And I had one individual, very, very technically strong, still one of very technical expert. And his division head, he was a branch head, and he came in and he said, I don't know whether I should apply for the division head job. And I said, well, why wouldn't you? And he said, because I don't want to lose my technical edge. Mm-hmm. And in the particular division that he that division head leads, you know, different positions, I would say, have a different level of maybe technical piece.
Yeah, kind of a working level supervisor-ish.
Right. And then when you're talking about strategic direction of where we're going, I need that technical edge to help in the mission of this division on where we're going to take the organization and how it impacts not only the command but the Navy. And so I told him, I said, you know what, as a division head, I said, you need to have management and leadership, but you can keep that technical edge as long as you're using that to lead and develop those that your branch heads and your other technical leadership. You can't own it all, right? You can learn it and know it, but you have to teach, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're doing that in consonance with that leadership of that technical expertise, then it will work. And he applied, he actually got the job, and he's been in the position for, oh my gosh, 2 or 3 years, and taking our organization and the Navy in places I could only have dreamt for. I will also add, though, once in a while, leadership, we have to roll up our sleeves and we have to dig in, right? It's an emergent situation, right? It's all hands on deck. Yeah. And I think as a leader, you know, it can't be, hey, we're going home, it's 4 o'clock while everybody else stays till midnight. There's times when we need to get in the trenches and that's where that technical credibility, I think, also, and trust gets built too, is when the workforce, you know, or they know, hey, you know what, they're not afraid to get dirty, yeah. You know, and I'll go to war with that person.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts about the need for building our skill sets as leaders when it comes to decisiveness?
I had to go through that with 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember being at home and, you know, watching the planes going into the World Trade Center, racing, you know, dropping my kids off almost at the curb, and my babysitter, she's like, I knew you, working for the Navy, you'd be coming early, right, and racing in, and I was a division head at the time, but I was the acting department head, so, you know, and it was just, you know, people were watching, at that point, the towers had not fallen, but we were focused on where are people, right? Because the first thing at all the department levels, we knew who's on travel, where are they, how do we get them? I mean, we were already going into how we get them home. On every hour, we had circling our buildings, looking for bombs, because we didn't know,
yeah.
Right? We just didn't know.
I had a similar experience.
You know, and even when the towers were falling, I wouldn't say numb, but my focus was on getting the people back, and I will mourn or grieve whatever the country is going through at another time. And I don't know if there's any training that could have told me that that's what I needed to do. And I don't think my experience is probably what other people went through. So I think there's a piece of individuality that we go through in that time of chaos. That said, I do think resiliency is so important. You know, we talk about with warfighting readiness that we can prepare as much as we want, but the competitor, the threat, is going to make the decisions on the conditions for what we're going to have to operate in. And so just creating an environment where people know that we be flexible, right? Be able to be pivot, be resilient, you know, be innovative. Mm. You know, a lot of the things we talk about, that's what's going to get us through those situations. We can't be stuck in the, this is the way we've always done it, or this is, the rules say this. No, you throw out the rules books out, right? And so I love the discussions, you know, we're having at NAVSEA and across the Navy with what are our break glass rule sets? And if we can break the glass rule sets during a wartime situation, then should we bring those back and do them now? Mm-hmm. Are there things that if we say we don't need them in a higher risk situation, then can we modify and streamline some of those things in what we're doing today to make us more effective and efficient?
As I speak with a lot of different leaders, one of the things that seems to come up time and time again is communication.
Believe it or not, communication and strategic thinking, mm-hmm. kind of the two align. So executive communication, executive presence, mm-hmm. we can get better at that apparently. What's your thought?
I think they go hand in hand. And just at Infosys, just a few weeks ago, right, we had a leadership gentleman come in from North Carolina University. And one of the things he was talking about in the kind of a three-circle Venn diagram, and I can't even remember what the two of them were. I think one was very strategic, the time you spend strategic. Then there was a vend of being a doer, but the one that resonated with me is being a translator. When we talk about
that hits for me.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
When we talk about communications and strategic thinking, it's leadership's job is to translate that, right? For what I hear from the CNO or for SecNav, or even in the National Defense Strategy, all the way down through NAVC and through Warfare Center leadership, I need to be translating those messages down to my leadership team, and then they in turn, right, making that personal down to their divisions and the branch heads down to the branches. Because when you try to take something at this high level straight down, even though they need to know it directly too, but they need to have the translation. So why is this important to me? And what does this mean to me and my task? Mm. And so I think that is a huge part of leadership is being that translator, right? It's not about just, you know, forwarding emails all hands.
Transfer.
It's not transfer, it's translate.
Love it.
Now, and I think that's something that we all, you know, and I'll just say even, you know, myself, I have to continue to work on that to make sure that just because it's easy to transfer something, I need to always be translating.
Hmm. Ooh, that's awesome, thank you. All right, so the third thing that tends to come up is all about something that's near and dear to my heart, which is what are senior leaders responsible for and how do they invest in the development of individuals and teams? It's different at the senior level than it is for a first line supervisor. We're thinking about bench strength. We're thinking about succession planning, right? Are these mm-hmm. the things? So how do we get better at that?
So building that one team environment, bridging the gap across, and then in that succession planning piece, really making sure that not just for those that are going to succeed us and making sure that they get the right experience, the right leadership courses, that they're involved in decision making so that they can even understand the why I made decisions, but down the organization, right? We've got to make sure that we have programs and processes that are going to not be dependent on me being in the job or the next person being in the job, that the organization, they can sustain with the organization just because of what we put in place for development at all levels.
So you mentioned that you're pretty close to retirement, and I'm sure you've already started to think about this. Maybe this is something that's interesting to the folks that are listening in and watching. It's certainly interesting to me, and I'm curious. Have you started to think about the word legacy, what you've done and what you're leaving, and as you're approaching that end of your career and you look back on it, have you thought, what do I want people to remember me for?
Yes, I have. I tell you right now, when I think about the things that make me most proud, and I have these very proud moments, and my eyes get watery, and I still have 11
I'm known
left.
For making people cry, just to say.
But I tell you, we went on a strategic We had a strategic plan 2020, and then it evolved into strategic plan 2030. And in our goals for advanced data analytics and engaged workforce and optimized infrastructure and innovative culture, the words changed a little bit between those two strategic plans. But I look back, and you know, sometimes you put a strategic plan in place, and you know, and people, well, are you measuring whether you accomplished what? But I'm looking back, and I see the progress that we've made and the difference we're making to the Navy when it comes to data analytics, transparency of information at the highest levels. You know, in our foundation principle here is trust, transparency, and teamwork, the three T's. And I look back and I go, we live it. We live it every day. Our processes, we're not perfect, but when we find problems, we let those guiding principles help pave the way to do things better. And I see it at all levels of my leadership, coming together, building more relationships across, being able to pivot to meet needs for things that are in the Red Sea right now. And so I like to think that I was at least a part of building a culture in this organization that is really truly helping to deliver things that the Navy needs. So that's, I think it's the culture. I guess I haven't really thought about it, but now that you've asked me and I'm rambling on, I think I'm most proud of the culture of the organization.
So as we come to a close here, we've kind of wandered around the map a bit and talked about a lot of things, but it's all relevant to the audience. If there was one key point that you'd like to relay to the listener, especially I think I want the folks that are considering leadership, what's the one key thing that you'd like to tell them to help them think about themselves and think about what leading is and maybe make that decision to invest themselves and become that more formal leader?
If I was thinking about one thing to be thinking about, I think it's that you want to do more than self, that you want to influence and make a difference for the organization that's larger than just you or your program or your project, because leadership really is about making a difference and being a part of the greater good. So if that's in the DNA of you out there, if you want to lead people and make the world a better place, then leadership's for you.
You're absolutely an authentic leader. You've shared that with us. I'm just blessed and thankful that you support this program, that you took the time to spend with not just me, but the audience of the Propel Fuel podcast. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining this episode of the Fuel Podcast, brought to you by NAVSEA's Propel Leadership Development Program. For more information about Propel, visit the Propel Wiki page. Thanks for adding fuel to propel your journey.